Persistent vegetative state is a medical designation that has been around in some form since the 1800s. Yet what does it describe? The autopsy report of Terry Schiavo in 2005 declared that her brain injury from an oxygen deprivation incident in 1990 was irreversible, and that autopsy report supported the court decisions to withdraw Terry Schiavo's life support. Adrian Owen is a cognitive neuroscientist and professor at Western University in Canada. He joins us today from his home in London, Ontario. Welcome, Professor.
Hello there.
What are we talking about when we say persistent vegetative state? And with diagnostic tools in the brain, can we actually see a lot of different states that can be described in some form as vegetative inside the brain?
Well, certainly we can, and actually technology is changing the situation very quickly. Typically, when we talk about persistent vegetative state, what we mean is a patient who is awake but unaware. So they'll open their eyes, they may even seem to look around the room, they go to sleep at night sometimes, but they seem to be completely unaware. And by that I mean you cannot attract their attention with a noise or ask them to look at something or address them in any way and expect a response. But that's the long-term clinical picture, and that's the way that it's been for many years. Recently, neuroimaging tools, things like fMRI, so-called functional magnetic resonance imaging, is being used to show that some of these patients have some residual abilities that were simply not detectable at the bedside. So even though they appear to be unaware, some of them may turn out to have some level of awareness in the fMRI scanner.
Now, the fMRI actually tracks blood flow, so the neural activity is sort of linked to the blood flow. When you say abilities and awareness, what kinds of things are we talking about?
I'll begin with the extreme case, if you like, and this is something that doesn't occur very often, but we're seeing it now in about 20% of our patients. The analogy I like to use is the clinical one, that when you're trying to establish whether a patient is aware, often you'll say, well, squeeze my hand, and the patient may not be able to do it. But what we do is we put the patient in the scanner and we say, imagine this scenario or that scenario. And these are scenarios that we know are linked to particular changes in fMRI activity in the brain. So one very simple one is to ask patients to imagine that they're playing a game of tennis. It may seem like a rather strange thing to do, but we do it because that tends to get people to imagine waving their arms around as though they had a tennis racket, and that activates the motor regions of the brain. So the analogy there is, instead of asking a patient to raise their arm, we're asking them to imagine moving their arm, and we can detect that imaginary response. Now, although it's an imaginary response, it's still a response, and in that sense, it can still indicate awareness or some residual awareness, because the patient is doing what we ask them to do, albeit with their brain rather than their body.
All right. Is it possible, though, that within the brain there are hierarchies of these kinds of responses, just in the same way that the body may look like it's responding, but if it's a reflex, it actually doesn't constitute consciousness? Could the same thing be going on in the brain?
That's absolutely certainly the case. So, for example, many of these patients, and I think it's close to the majority, will have very simple reflexive brain responses, to use your terminology. So if, for example, we play the patient speech, we will see activity in the so-called speech areas of the brain, that the parts of the brain that we know process language. Now, we know that doesn't mean that all of these patients understand speech and are processing it and could respond. It's because speech responses, at least the brain's response to speech, is an automatic one. It's not exactly reflexive, but it's automatic. You can't turn your brain off from listening to speech. So, yes, there is a hierarchy of responses, and that's why at the lower levels, things like automatic reflexive responses, we see this in many, many patients, and we don't conclude too much, to be honest. But these higher level responses, where the person is actively generating a brain state, is something that occurs really in a much smaller number of patients.
You know, the huge takeaway here is that, in the Terry Schiavo case, and traditionally when these kinds of brain injuries were evaluated medically, the question was, will they get better? And that was the question for the family, and that was the question that families asked doctors, and these were the frustrating questions that couldn't necessarily be answered. But your research suggests that there's another approach, and that is, can someone live in a state where they have access to the outside world using some different kinds of technologies if, as you describe, they are covertly aware? They don't traditionally respond through language, but they still can be reached. We're getting to the point where we can actually answer that question.
We are. And we reported on a patient, for example, last year who had been in a vegetative state for 15 years. And this gentleman, we put him into the scanner on many occasions. And we actually got into a situation where we were having a fairly regular dialogue. We asked him many questions about his life, his situation. We were able to establish that he knew who he was, where he was. He knew how long he'd been there. He had attitudes. He had opinions. We asked him whether he was in any pain, because that's a question that his family were concerned about. And we really didn't know the answer. And of course, we can therapeutically do something about it. Had the answer been yes, we would have given him some painkillers. But fortunately, the answer turned out to be no. So we are entering an era where some of these patients, and I want to emphasize it is a small minority, but nevertheless, there are significant numbers of these patients that are, as you say, covertly aware. We're beginning to detect them, and we're beginning to enter an era where we may be able to communicate with them on a semi-regular basis, which may allow them to contribute to their own therapeutic future, if you like, to make decisions about what happens to them.
Adrian Owen, cognitive neuroscientist and professor at Western University in Ontario, Canada. Adrian, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.